In this episode, we listen to Siobhan Timmons. Siobhan is a fantastic professional who I've had the pleasure of meeting a few times, and she helps write social stories for young people, particularly with autism and other areas of special needs. And in this podcast, you'll hear all about what social stories are and how they can benefit the young people we work with.
Okay, so Siobhan, what are social stories?
Well, a social story is basically a story that shares social information with children and adults on the autism spectrum. And it does so in a really respectful way of the different way that they pick up and interpret the world around them.
Brilliant. So you mentioned there about how children might interpret the world around them. I once read a book actually that you recommended, which is one of the best books I've read around autism as context blindness. Could you just explain a little, because you're going to be able to explain better than me, how do maybe some of the children see the world around them? And how does that link to that book that you recommended?
Well, Peter Vermeulen's work talks about how context blindness might be the common thing behind how people on the autism spectrum experience the world. So that when we walk into a new situation or something changes in our environment, we as non-autistic people immediately get the gist of the change. We see a context, and that leads us to analyse what's going on around us, to take in the clues that are significant and relevant to it, and to ignore the stuff that isn't relevant to that. And so it's less of a sort of a processing and more of like predictive coding, like a computer, that we get an idea of what we're going to see. Yeah. And then we pick up what doesn't fit with that, and then we reevaluate what we're seeing. And for some of our children, that's more difficult. They're not getting the context, and therefore they're not paying attention to those specific relevant clues. And it gives them a confusing picture, a different picture that's valid to them, but it's a different interpretation of what's going on. And they're at a disadvantage socially if they haven't got the same information that we have. So that's really kind of what's behind it. The book is brilliant. The book is just simply brilliant. I couldn't put it into words, but read Context Blindness by Peter Vermeulen, everybody, and you'll get an idea.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is a really good book. Going back to, because you've done a lot of writing yourself, haven't you, Siobhan? And obviously around social stories. But why did you start writing social stories in the first place? Like, where did that passion come from?
Okay, so my son was diagnosed as on the autistic spectrum when he was 2. And I was searching for ideas and information. I was searching for some information, and I went to actually the first conference in this country that Carol Gray, who devised and developed social stories, she's from Michigan in the States. When she first came to the UK, I was at that conference, and what she said just blew me away. It made perfect sense. She was speaking from a platform of absolute respect for that different perspective. And that was quite a different thing at that time. And she was describing the different but equally valid perspective and how we needed to share our perspectives. And then we needed to share social information. So I went back and did the training and started using social stories with my son. And they were so phenomenally effective in making him less anxious, making the world predictable for him, just sharing the information he was missing, really. And he, you know, he thrived on it. And so I started using them. I never stopped. And then I shared it with as many people as I could, because it was just so important, I thought. That's how it started, really.
I mean, I've never seen her speak, but I've heard lots about her, read a lot of what she's done as well. She does sound like a fantastic person.
She's pretty inspirational, and she's a fantastic speaker, yeah.
So, Siobhan, you spoke about, obviously, social stories and training to then write them. And I've sat in one of your training sessions as well. If there was maybe teachers or parents listening to this podcast, how would they go about becoming trained or to gain a better understanding of social stories?
Yeah. Well, we have established at Market Field School the Essex Centre for the Social Stories Satellite, that was approved by Carol Gray. And we run from there trainings for parents and professionals, for anybody actually, for anybody who's working with or alongside or caring for or loving somebody with autism who wants to learn this technique. It's open to everybody. The training runs every term, in school term. Obviously at the moment all that's a bit up in the air.
Of course.
That will come back when the situation is safer. So, yes, everybody's welcome to come on. They book on the website, on Marketfield website, under training. And I also go out and I do trainings for organisations on request. So they can contact me through that website or through my own website. And I will go and train them at their site if they wish to. So I can train a large group or a smaller group that way. So I also do the training for the National Autistic Society for professionals as well. Wow. So that goes on across the country, so that you can access that through the National Autistic Society site too.
Yeah, so there's a few options there if you are listening to this and you think, yeah, actually that's something that would benefit someone you love or someone you work with. I can vouch for it as well. I know I've sat in before and listened to Siobhan, and Siobhan delivers some great training and some great understanding around social stories, which is brilliant. You mentioned, obviously, at the moment, it's harder. We can't all get together and train on certain things that we're passionate about. Social stories at the moment might be of even greater use to some parents in this time. Why do you think that is? How can social stories help?
We're in a real flux of change, aren't we? Everything is changing at the moment. And that's really tough on our kids. Yeah. It's actually tough on everybody, but it's even more tough on our kids. So we have to share social information with them. You know, if you just even looking at the words we're using, this new vocabulary, social distancing, social isolation, lockdown, pandemic, epidemic, even the evolution of the word. When we started this, we were talking about coronavirus. Now we're talking about COVID-19. Is that the same thing? Is that different? And there's a huge amount of information that's assumed that people know. Now, if our kids aren't picking up on that information, they may actually be making sense of it in a way that's worse than it is, you know. So it's very important that we give them very clear, unassuming information in a very positive way, because it's not enough to tell people what not to do. You need to be able to tell them what they can do. How are they empowered in it? What can they do about it? How can they keep themselves safe? And so the social stories, I think, really are critical in this sort of situation. And actually, strangely enough, I've heard people say that a couple of stories I've written and the other stories that are written, Carol Gray's written quite a few on her website, which is carolgraysocialstories.com, I think. And there's free access to those. And they've helped non-autistic adults as well, because they're written in such a careful, positive and reassuring way. So it's helped make sense of the situation for all of us. But, you know, they're written for autistic children and adults, but we can all benefit from it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really a really good point. That's something I'm going to come back to in a second. But have you written any specifically in this time, Siobhan?
Yes. I've written what is, I'm learning about coronavirus, what is coronavirus, and also learning to wash hands again carefully. So those two stories went up on my website. They're freely available on there. There are several more that I will be uploading the next day or so, which are on about what is a lockdown. And important to know what is social isolating, you know, what does social isolating mean? Because you can be in a lockdown, but then somebody gets ill in your family and then they have to socially isolate within your lockdown. So there are things that we assume everybody understands, but that might be very difficult to work out what's going to happen.
Yeah, of course.
Work out that sort of thing. So there's a few more coming up. They take a while to write because, you know, there was so many uncertainties, you know, writing about when will this pandemic end. That's quite difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, because absolutely.
But we do know all pandemics start, spread, and eventually stop.
Yes.
This one has started, spread, and it will eventually stop. It's just what day, we don't know quite yet.
Yeah.
So it's things like that, really, just trying to put things into perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. You've explained that really, really well, Siobhan, as well. So I hope people listen. Just remind us of your website as well, if they did want to.
Yes, it's siobhantimmins.uk. Very easy.
So you spoke about vocabulary there. Is something that, again, I know from speaking with you before, is really important, especially when we're talking to some of our young people. Could you just repeat why it's so important that we choose our words carefully, not just in this moment, but all the time when we talk to some young people with, specifically with autism? Why is it important that we we watch our words?
If we consider that context blindness is playing a big part of understanding of language, which it must do because context is all around us, understanding why someone is saying something, what they mean, is influenced by the context they're in, and it's influenced by their internal context, what they are like a person, and what goes on for them. And so our children, we know, are literal thinkers and speakers, understand language very literally. Well, what that means is that they're understanding language acontextually, without the context. So, you know, for some words we use, for some situations that we find ourselves in, as non-autistic people, we are reading the context in order to guide us to what those words mean. In children who haven't got that information is missing. They may be perceiving those words in a different way. So we have to be clear that what we're giving them is literally accessible and very positive and simple as well, that according to how, whatever level the young person is at, I mean, if they're highly intelligent and able to manage a very large number of words and sentences and paragraphs, then that is how that article should be written for them. A social article is written is the more adult form of social stories. But okay, so our words need to be chosen according to their understanding, attention span, their literality, and words that are meaningful for them. Because there are some words, for example, like writing a social story about coronavirus, there's some words that have whole different meanings. You know, there's if we talk about a bug, for example.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
Well, a bug can be an insect or a germ.
Yeah, quite.
Or it can be a little cartoon character, or it can be, you know, so we have to be really careful that words we're using that we understand have the same meaning for that child and are the words that they need to explain that situation.
Again, he explains it really well, Siobhan, and it's a really good link, because we spoke to some children who are autistic in the last few days, and some of what they've been saying you've kind of echoed, but particularly around making sure that adults understand their understanding and what they're saying to them, so that it doesn't create confusion or even anxiety.
And we need to listen to them. We need to listen to what that is the secret. The secret of social stories is the first thing is to abandon our assumptions that we know what they know. Okay, yeah. That's the first assumption we have to ban. And the second thing we have to do then is gather information. And the first person we need to talk to is the child.
Absolutely.
And ask them what their take is on it. And that will give us so much information that we will be able to see what the missing bits are, and then we can help.
Definitely. And listeners will get from that exactly why I wanted to talk to Siobhan so much, because it's exactly what the multi-school is all about. It's about listening.
It is, yeah.
Empowering young people and giving them the chance to speak. So just on that, we're obviously trying to challenge some of the misconceptions that might be out there about our young people. For you, Siobhan, what are sometimes the biggest misconceptions out there amongst adults and children about autism, but maybe even about social stories and the way they work?
Okay, well, first of all, the social stories, I see a lot of social stories that are written purely from a neurotypical perspective, or somebody telling a child what they're doing wrong, how bad that makes other people feel, how they need to change what they're doing, and then everything will be fine. And that would not be a social story as written according to the criteria. So I see social stories that have been put together in very, for the best reasons. They want to help the child, but they can be incredibly directive. And if they're not done without gathering information first, then assumptions will be made. And one thing that's very clear, when neurotypical people assume a neurotypical motivation or intent behind a response that they see from an autistic person, they are likely to be an error. So if they act on that, they're going to be an error. And that's what I see a lot. So if somebody does an unexpected response, we assume that they knew what they're doing and they've done it deliberately for another, which might be the motivation or intention behind a non-autistic child, but may not be the intention behind an autistic child who have a different interpretation of that event.
Yeah.
So that's one of the most important things. So I think that's what we do frequently, is that we prejudge and we don't abandon our assumptions, and we don't keep in mind a different autistic perspective. And yeah. We need to do that.
And again, I think the word you've used a lot throughout us speaking, Siobhan, is the word assumptions. Making sure that we're not, you know, making assumptions about the young people we work with or care for. You'd say that's kind of one of the strongest messages get across.
In social stories, it's one of the foundations of the philosophy of social stories would be abandon assumptions. We have to question our assumptions and then abandon them. And then we've got to gather information to get the truth, to get the alternative perspective that's valid for that child. And we do it all with respect. So I think that's the other thing about social stories, is they're so respectful of the people that they're written for. We want to listen to them, we want to understand them, and then we want to fill in some gaps that will help them. Because if you're missing this information, you're at a disadvantage, you know, and you can be helped. It can be helped,
Absolutely. And again, I love what you've said there, because you've completely backed up what the young people have said about not prejudging them and just thinking that because they may have met another child who has autism, that they're going to be exactly the same as...
Yeah. And there is such a huge, huge diverse... Like the spectrum of the autistic spectrum is as wide and diverse as the neurotypical spectrum. We are absolutely all individuals and different, aren't we?
Absolutely.
And you know, that it's just so important to just value each child in a different way.
And it reassures us actually that some of the stuff when we're going into schools and talking to young people, you're echoing that. So it's really lovely to hear.
One of the things about the Multi-Schools Council that's really is important to me is that over the years I've had so many children say that they feel invisible, without a voice. They are told what to do by other people. Their opinions are voiced by other people. Assumptions are made about what they're thinking or feeling or saying. And what you're doing at the MSC, I think, is giving them a voice. And every single human being on this planet needs to be heard and valued. Everyone should have a voice. No one should feel invisible. So absolutely. I think that's what you're doing that is so important. And I think the things that you share with social stories is that actually what you're doing is looking for the common features between all people, isn't it? And getting children to share social information about them with other children. And I was thinking just today that actually at the moment we're all in an uncertain and unpredictable place. And what do we seek? We seek information, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
And we feel anxious because we're uncertain and it's unpredictable. So I think we are sharing a little bit of what it must feel like sometimes to be living in an autistic world. And it's a good lesson in that respect.
Definitely.
Only in that respect, but, you know, yes.
Definitely. And if you are listening to this podcast, if you go back and listen to, we've got a podcast called The Power of Sport and Music from a young boy called Connell. And Connell basically says exactly what Siobhan has just said about how in this time it's making other people understand how it can be for these young people sometimes who don't always receive all the information. It can be mixed and how uncertain that can make people feel.
Yeah. And uncertainty breeds anxiety and fear.
Yes.
And I think all our guys tell us that they're looking for predictability, they're looking for certainty, they're looking for clarity from us. If we can provide, that's what we're searching for now, isn't it?
Definitely.
So we really need to learn from that, I think. Yeah.
Siobhan, I could speak and listen to you all day. I think you've given some really good advice, and the listeners, I think, will learn and pick up a lot. Can we just finish with your questions? The young people have said they'd like some of these podcasts to include at the end just three completely kind of general questions. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
Number one, what's your favourite TV programme?
Oh, now that's difficult. I kind of catch up on iPlayer with series that people tell me have been really good. So I kind of cheat. Yeah. I don't really sit down and watch the TV. What I do watch a lot of, which I'd watch with my son, is I watch a lot of David Attenborough.
Your favourite type of chocolate?
Milk chocolate, Belgian milk chocolate.
Your favourite time of day?
I think actually if I can get up early, I think very early in the morning when the day's still just very quiet and very fresh and full of possibilities. Yeah. Then.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Thanks, Siobhan. As I said, it's been really brilliant talking to you.
Oh, it's good to talk to you too, Kieran. Keep up the good
Everyone
work.
Everyone is different and special in their own way. We should be including everyone, so let's start to